Welcome to Toxic Tangents, powered by Million Marker. We're here to discuss and answer questions about everyday toxic chemicals in our lives. Learn more about Million Marker and how we can help minimize your toxic exposures at millionmarker.com. And now, here's our latest episode. Welcome back to Toxic Tangents, Million Marker's podcast. Today, we will be continuing with Jackie Bowen to talk more about the Clean Label Project and how toxic chemicals affect our lives.
So could we go into a little bit about how the certification program works, how you certify your baby food, your other food products, and their personal care products?
Sure. So as I mentioned, the way we look at the world is that compliance with the food safety regulatory requirements, that's table stakes. So along those lines, one of the first things we require is that they have proof of food safety, right? Your GFSI benchmark standards, certify HACCP, which would be your hazard and critical control point analysis, supplier assurance program, your HARP-C programs, hazard analysis, preventive risk controls, that you've got the checks and balances in place to make sure you get a reproducibly good product when it comes to kind of traditional food safety. The next thing that we do is we do testing of their actual finished products. And what we do at the test results is we actually benchmark them to the categories that we have benchmark data. So to put that into perspective of like when I mean benchmarking, and what I really consider to be Clean Label Project special sauce is that, you know, for those of you that have kiddos at home, you know, when you take your kid to the pediatrician, let's say, you know, for their 3-month checkup or 6-month checkup, and they're like, okay, we're going to get the height, we're going to get the weight, we're going to get the head circumference. They measure their height and be like, okay, you know, she's at the 50th percent, or, you know, she measures at however tall, we'll do head circumference. We'll say at 6 months, 16 centimeters. I just happen to remember that stat. Okay. Yep. She's right on, she's right 50th percentile. She's right on target where she needs to be. Perfect. You know, but if they happen to say to you like, okay, she measures at 16 centimeters. Naturally, as a parent, you'd be like, well, is that good? Is that bad? Is that normal? I don't know. When you have benchmark data and you're like, well, compared to all other 16-month-old babies, she's completely at the 50th percentile. She's completely on average. Similarly, they're able to say, okay, looking at the height and the weight, she's at the 95th percentile. Look like you might have a basketball player in the making. Or maybe if she's on the tiny side in terms of the weight, she's at the 7th percentile. Let's make sure she gets all the nutrients that she needs in order to grow and thrive. Or, you know, maybe she's just going to be petite and that's okay too. Having access to benchmark data gives you more of that competitive insight of how does my product actually stack up to everybody else's? That's the way the Clean Label Project certification program works, that we test their product essentially to over 400 industrial and environmental contaminants, including phthalates, BPA, BPS, your heavy metals, and your pesticides, as well as a few other things, depending on the category. And then we take those test results and we benchmark them to, well, how did all the other products in this category generally perform? Whether that category is baby food, infant formula, protein powder, deodorants. And then you're able to say, okay, compared to all these other ones, your product is in, you can be able to say like you're in this percentile. And you may, just like if you think about it almost like in grade school, you know, if you take a science class, a math class, an English class, and a Spanish class, you don't have to get straight A's in order to make the honor roll. You don't have to have absolute perfection in order to make the honor roll. You just need to be in the top 30% of your class in terms of the way Clean Label Project looks at the world. You know, one of the things that's so important to note is that things like heavy metals are naturally occurring in the Earth's crust. So you're never going to get a non-detect. Likewise, even just this current state and capabilities of science when it comes to testing for plastics as well as pesticides, again, rarely do you see non-detects. I mean, it depends on the levels of sensitivity, of course, but sometimes you'll get small hits and things like that, or you can only test down to a certain sensitivity. So what we look at is you're also able to see certain interesting things of like, looking at all that the 560, you know, different baby foods, you're one of seven that has a glyphosate hit. You know, that's one where it's like, that's clearly an anomaly of like, if we're going to pinpoint where that came from, chances are it's one of your grain-based ingredients. Do some more homework there to figure out that root cause analysis, because obviously glyphosate, the active ingredient Roundup, which has links to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, obviously that's a hot button right now. So we're able to give that kind of insight back to brands to help them kind of navigate forward. But again, these are things that are really important to consumers as well.
Yeah, great. As a consumer, how do you find this information?
Yes. So first I would say, obviously, Clean Label Project is a great resource. I love you guys for having access. You're so focused on kind of like the endocrine disruption stuff, focusing on, you know, BPA phthalates, which I love that. Clean Label Project is a great resource in terms of identifying the brands that are proactively having their products randomly screened for these types of contaminants. But then as a whole, if it's one where it's like, you know, Clean Label Project certifies dozens of, you know, hundreds of products, dozens of different brands, but if they're not certified, either tell them they should be, but even along those lines, go on social media, ask questions, demand answers, especially with social media, allows you to do that publicly and hold brands accountable for that information. And it's really important for if you have certain products in your home that are favorites of your family, then do your homework and making sure that it's the best fit for you.
It's also really interesting you mentioned about benchmarking, and this is also giving us also a plugging that, you know, when we do measure human exposure, we also kind of do benchmarking also on percentile stage, because these chemicals are very hard to have a non-detect. Like, it's literally like everywhere.
Yeah.
So like our goal is also same as Clean Label Project. We want to empower consumers. You know, you might not be able to get rid of everything, but at least like these chemicals have no business to be in your body. You want to get rid of as much as possible. The in the industry too, that, you know, there might be hardships. We can't get rid of everything, but at least we're trying our best.
Well, and it's interesting when you say it that way too, because especially if you get different types of information on people of like, this is their age, their demographic, what they eat, how active they consider themselves. Do they take supplements and things like that? You'd be like, okay, well, compared to other 30 to 50 year old women, you're in the whatever percentile when it comes to the level of this in your blood. And then it helps put in perspective. If you're like, okay, I'm about average, well, yeah, I probably should eat less of this or transition my whatever plastic containers and those kinds of things. But then it's one where you're able to show them like, listen, you have the absolute highest amount of this I've ever seen in somebody. Then it's like such an eye-opening experience. So you guys, it's interesting because you're able to get down to that personal health level. Right? It's not just a matter of like, I'm looking at it as here's what you're consuming, how that actually manifests itself, for example, into like blood lead levels or other kind of levels. I don't see that.
And I see potential collaboration in the future because you're able to test for the external exposures and we can test internal and we can definitely do some important work there.
Absolutely.
Circling back to some practical things that people can do, how do you get consumers to look beyond these product marketing labels?
Yeah, I would say as a whole, how to get them to look past it. At the end of the day, I personally find right now consumers are the new arbiters of truth and transparency. You know, there was a study that came out a few years back. I'm trying to think of the source right now. Pew Research on trust. And one of the things that they found was something like 7% trust in the federal government. And so the thing is, it's like when someone is just like thinking of like, no, we comply with federal regulations, like what federal regulations, you know, along those lines, it's one where if you provide access to consumers, they can make access to information for consumers, they'll make the choice of what's the best fit for their family. You know, just like we always see, just like when you go to the store, there's ones where it's like certified organic is important for some people. Non-GMO is important for others. Certified kosher is important to others. And it's one where some of them may look at it as like, okay, you know, there's different critical periods in somebody's life, like getting pregnant or being diagnosed with some type of disease that can really affect how they approach their health and wellness. And it's a matter of you provide them access to that information and allow them to make the choice of, you know, what makes the most sense for you. And I think for me, that's what makes sense. Just provide consumers the information, they'll decide.
Right. Back to that transparency thing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I saw that we have one other question. This might be a question from either our Instagram followers or users. We talk a lot about, you know, leaching from packaging here. So we're wondering about your thoughts on packaging, you know, for example, like milk cartons. Is there anything like, you know, leaching from milk cartons or other things?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know what? I'm not exactly positive, Jenna, maybe you would know, because I'm thinking about there's like so many new interesting containers coming out, right? You've got, you know, your traditional cardboard, which I'm sure has some type of liner in there, as well as potentially an antibacterial of some sort in there. And then of course you've got your plastic ones. And now there's all kinds of really new fun things around recyclable plastics and things like that, where I'm not exactly sure. And I'd be interested in the science on that of like, we want to encourage recycling, of course, but then it's one where it's like, when you're not talking about virgin plastic, is there any different kind of exposure that comes from non-virgin plastic? Do you guys happen to know that?
We actually have been looking into that, but there is no, I think like so far, based on our research, there is nothing conclusive.
Okay.
So one thing is, you know, but all the new biodegradable plastic, PHA and all these things supposed to be good. But however, we don't really have any, you know, longitudinal studies or anything to actually, you know, learn how good these things are or if they have any like detrimental impact.
Yes.
At the same time, one other issue, at least our vision that we're trying to address, is that this whole mixture effect that, you know, we're have been studying one chemical at a time and we're testing one chemical at a time, but we get exposed to so many things all at the same time. But how do we actually look at that?
Oh, it's true. That's a great way to put it. So many of the studies you look at is like, yep, here's how lead is linked to this type of heart issue or brain damage, you know, in laboratory animals. But, you know, the thing is, we're not just exposed to lead. We've got lead and cadmium and arsenic and, you know, and phthalates and antibiotic residues. And how does all of this affect the microbiome? And how does all of this affect long-term health? I mean, first, nobody's going to be out there doing an actual, you know, clinical study on human exposure. Let's just dose these people with high levels of lead and see what happens for 30 years. Like, nothing like that is going to be happening right now. So it's one where you're right. I mean, it's very incomplete information, and we even more so limited when it comes to the cumulative effect of these exposures.
Yeah. I remember seeing the EU has a, you know, BPA free actually regulation, but that regulation is if product is less than say 0.5 milligram per kilogram of BPA, that's considering BPA free.
Oh,
but at the same time, if you actually consume a lot of those, it's like not exactly free. And it's also same as it reminds me of the whole trans fat labeling.
Yes.
You know, with food, trans fat labeling, it's the same thing, less than 0.5 grams per kilogram, then yes, that's trans fat free. But if you consume a lot of trans fat free stuff,
you have a lot of trans fat.
You still have a lot of trans fat, because anytime you have hydrogenated oil, you have trans fat. That's just like chemistry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Similar. I mean, we have a gluten-free definition. It's down to 20 parts per million, which from a celiac perspective, my understanding is that's generally protective of those that have celiac disease, but it's also one where it's like 20 part per million, given the capabilities of analytical chemistry these days, like that's a big number. Like you should be able to hit that, brands, if you're making a gluten-free claim, like that is still pretty generous in terms of the amount of gluten that is still allowed.
There's also a measuring, I guess this is another like a big topic in terms of analytical chemistry, is there's also measuring margins, right? Because I remember there was a study back then also again on trans fat. This agency tested all the food containing or not containing trans fat, and they realized the error rate is almost like 30%. Well, in terms of, you know, not just trans fat content, but also calorie, you're thinking you're consuming, you know, this much, but actually you're consuming 30% more.
Absolutely. And then that's a really good point. I mean, we see it too in terms of, I was having this conversation the other day of like, you know, the nutritional content of a carrot is not the same as every other carrot. It depends on the soil it came out of, the nutrient density. Like, you know, garbage in equals garbage out. Just like we talk about, there's contamination that takes place in the soil. If the soil is depleted of vitamins and nutrients, then it's also one where that carrot is not going to absorb all of that same goodness that it once did. So yeah, you're absolutely correct. That variability issue is a very real reality that people don't talk about either.
This is so cool. Anyone have any questions? I think we're almost time.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much.
Awesome. This was
great. Thank you, Jackie.
It's been really great talking to you today, Jackie. We've learned so much, and I know people will want to get on your website and look for themselves all the information you have. So thank you so much, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you for the opportunity.
How people can find your info.
For more information on Clean Label Project, visit us at cleanlabelproject.org or check us out on social media under the handle Clean Label Project.
This episode was produced and edited by Jiaxin Feng. Theme music by Joe Rochester and Grady Harper. Visit us at millionmarker.com to learn about our test kit and other services, read our blog posts on a variety of topics, ask a question that you'd like answered, or suggest a topic for us to discuss on the show. Thanks for listening.